Stockholm is a state of minds. We talking about the culture, so come and feel the vibe. You gon' have a good time. We helping you to see it. So much to do when living in Stockholm, Sweden. Yeah, yeah, let's go. Stockholm is a state of minds. Hey, Stockholm is a state of minds. Yeah, we break it down like this and like that. Welcome to the podcast. Stockholm is where it's at. Let's go.
Imagine that you get a job in another country and you choose to move there alone, with a partner or with a family. You leave your ordinary daily life behind with all what that means: family, friends, work, language, and sometimes also a religious community we have been active in some way. You end up lonely in this new place and you feel lost in many different ways. One meaningful step can be to find people who share your beliefs and values. But where to start? We have invited Ulf Lindgren, who is priest in the Church of Sweden, to learn more about religion in Sweden today and also to get some tips where to go and find your community. You are so welcome, Ulf.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for coming, Ulf. I have to start off with this first question, because Maria said you're a priest in the Church of Sweden, but your official title, am I wrong, is Reverend Canon Precentor.
Yeah, that's the English version of my title, because if you go to a cathedral in England, every priest working there is called canon. Mm. So canon is really the old, really medieval word for priest in cathedral. And then each canon has an extra title telling a little bit what is he doing in the cathedral. Okay. And precentor is someone who is not presenting. It sounds like I'm standing on a big chair talking, but it's really the one responsible for the daily activities, deciding who is going to do what, when, where. And also, as I'm working in the Cathedral of Stockholm, we have a lot of questions about filming. People want to make advertise in the cathedral about shampoo and then showing a photograph of the Crown Princess and say, if you use our shampoo, you will become a princess because it was here that she became, blah, blah. So we have questions like that nearly every day. So that's my job, is to say no to people and then, oh, yes, to others.
Wow. So if I want to prank you, I can send many different emails about random tasks that someone wants to do.
Yeah, and you will have no on most of them.
Oh, sounds like that. Right, so we know, most of people know that Sweden is a Lutheran country, but Sweden has a long history and we haven't always been Lutheran in Sweden. So couldn't you tell us a brief history of faith in Sweden, Ulf, if we start maybe with Nordic mythology?
Yeah, we could start before the year 1000. And what we have discovered lately is that it isn't really so Nordic as we thought. Mm. We have a mythology. Probably that mythology was a lot created in when people encountered the Roman civilization. Mm. There was no mythology, what we know of, before that, let's say 400 in our time. Mm. We have no clues at all. But then around 400, 500, 600, something developed, the saga culture, and that is probably inspired by the encounters in the late Roman Empire, when Swedes, Danes especially, went down and worked for the Romans.
Oh, yeah.
So that continued. We don't really know people were religious in any way, and I can calculate that. We know that there were a couple of places with offering, usually animal offerings, a couple of times a year, but we do not know at all about how spread this was. How was it an activity that everyone took part, or was it just a local thing? We have really no clue. What we know is that Christianity comes in different waves. We have one already in the 8th century, a little droplets coming up to Denmark. Then we have one German person coming up to central Sweden, 950. A couple of people becomes Christian, and then probably it all dies out. Mm-hmm. And then there is a missionary wave from Russia, from the east part, coming to Gotland mostly, to the big island in the Baltic. So you have small parts, but it really starts end of the 11th century. Then Denmark starts to become more and more Christian, and parts of Norway. Sweden is the last of the countries, and it's really dots here and there on the map, and it's when the rich person in the area, when he decides to get baptized, the whole family get baptized, and he has contact through the church with the continent. So it's not because they are very Christian, but they want to become part of this European Union that is the Catholic Church. And you have to go to the middle of the 12th century, really 1150, then you can say that most parts of southern Sweden, middle Sweden, is Christian, and you have churches started.
So, which is the oldest church?
Well, you usually you say the oldest stone church is Dalby outside Lund in south of Sweden. That is probably 1,000 years old, a little bit more, parts of it. And then you have in Östergötland, close to the big lake Vättern, you have a couple of churches from 1110 and 20.
Okay.
So you could say Denmark is first, parts of Norway comes then, and then Sweden. Slowly, 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 and around 1150, you could say the whole country is part of the church. But what's important to remember then, that it was an extremely poor Sweden. All the clergy were peasants, and they were working on Sunday in the church, but the rest of the week they were working outside, being farmers, and they were all married. So the celibacy never came to Sweden. And down in Rome, they heard about it in the 13th century and sent up an ambassador saying, you shouldn't get married. And they said, okay, then you have to give us a salary. And if we don't have a salary, we have to be married, because we have, not because we love women, but because we must have children to work. Otherwise, we can't survive. So you, most of the clergy were married and had families up until the Reformation in the 16th century.
And then the Reformation comes to Sweden, and sort of how does that develop within a Swedish context?
It's a very, very different form of Reformation compared to England and to rest of Europe. We had no problem with the church. There was no criticism. There was no opposition, really, at all. Well, what the problems we had were really about individual bishops that use their power and behave strangely and all that. But there were no religious opposition. So what happens is that one very young man, 22-something, from Stockholm, he goes down to Wittenberg to study, and he happens to be in the classroom of Martin Luther. So he was a bit inspired. But, I mean, if he was all alone, there wouldn't have been a Reformation. But when he comes back, he discovers that the old regime has just fallen. The old regime means that there was a union between all the Nordic countries. So Denmark and Norway, Sweden and Finland, one big empire with the king sitting in Denmark, because Denmark was the richest part. Now, all that construction had survived for more than 100 years, but in 1523, it collapses. And Sweden, Finland becomes an independent country, and the young new king is Gustav Vasa. And he was not religious at all, but he was an extremely lack of money. And then comes this Ulle down from Wittenberg. And these two individuals are making the whole Reformation.
Really?
One because he was so inspired by Luther. The other, that because he was so desperate of money. So when he heard that Ulle said that in the Bible there is not a word about monasteries or the Pope, the king said, okay, let's kick out the Pope, I be Ross instead, and let's stop all monastic activities, let's close them, and I take the gold. And so they did.
Wow, smart.
So he got the power, and it wasn't really power in that way. It was really a little bit more deepened construction, because you had two separate fiscal systems, tax systems. So you had the state, and then you had the church, and the church owned a lot of territories, and all that taxation went as a separate system, and the king had no control. But the Reformation made it one big system, and all the revenues went into the king's pockets. So it was a political financial reformation done by two people and in 5 years. So it was extremely rapid.
Yes.
And of course, it took another 100 years to stabilize it into something that we could call Lutheran.
Mm.
But the break with Rome, the translation of the Bible, the translation of the Mass into Swedish took 5 years. So already in 1527, we are breaking with Rome and we are declaring ourselves a Lutheran country. First in the world as a big kingdom.
Mm.
So a little bit odd during the medieval period, very odd during the Reformation, and to continue being very odd because we have this extremely strong link between church and state.
Yeah.
So the state uses the church to communicate all the new laws, and the state uses the church to count the number of young boys.
Mm.
So they know exactly how many can we send to war.
Mm.
And instead, the church uses the state to listen to the poor. So the clergy has a seat in the parliament, and when the situation in the countryside is too difficult, they say, stop, you can't continue because the people are suffering. Now it's enough. If you don't stop this, there will be no more young boys to send to war because they are starving. So the state listened and modified taxes and inscriptions of war. So there was a given. So the church wasn't really the small boy, but they were depending on each other, using each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very, very tight grip.
Mm. Mm. And that sort of that connection between church and state, am I correct, sort of lasted until the year 2000.
Yeah.
And their separation happens. I think one thing I've been curious about as of living here is what does that mean today? Because I think I hear murmurings of, okay, it's separated, but there is a connection and I can't quite sort of shine the light on the connection. So could you help understand
it? In a very easy way, you could say the only separation that there is that church itself decides who is going to be bishop. So that power was usually the king or the government who decided bishops. Now it's the church with an election. All the rest is really kept, should say. Meaning that the church is extremely present in everyday life, not as necessarily as a church, but as an organization that has been there for centuries, trying to support people in difficult times.
Mm.
So in each little area in the country, you have a small tight structure activated when there is a crisis. And in that little group is always a person from the Church of Sweden, together with the police and together with social services and all that, always. And it's automatic. It's not because the church wants it. It's the other one. They want us because we know about suffering. We know about death and crisis.
It's still the same function, though. When Gustav Vasa was there. So we have same kind of state and church relation. Good relation, really.
Yeah, you could say it's a collaboration that when church brings its competence in psychological behavior, and also
crisis situations.
The society is very much focused on curing. If you are suffering, you should be cured so that you are no longer suffering, and that's fine if you have a break in a leg, but sometimes everything isn't curable. Sometimes the persons are dead, and you can't really take that away, so you have to endure suffering. And social workers and the medical structure, they have difficulty in sitting, just coping, nothing, doing nothing.
Mm.
And we in the church are more used to that. So you could say that we are in schools, for instance, not because we are talking about the gospel, but we are there as an extra parent, extra teacher, extra friend, walking in the corridors, in some schools, not always, the whole time, but so you have that outside view, an independent view, and also someone that can say, oh, now this is not good.
Mm.
People are suffering. And you have clergy in all the hospitals, in all the prisons. Many of the, when the term ends, especially in summertime, the we have had inside the churches a ceremonial of let's say hello to summer and let's end this term and let's go out and be merry. And that has been inside the churches for centuries, and it still is in many places. So you could say that the it's more a rupture of power than of influence. So the church is still very much a part of society, though not as an evangelical evangelization part, talking about Christ the whole time. We are more trying to discover Christ in society than talking about.
What can we say about religious or spiritual Sweden today?
Very complicated also, but in a completely different way. Because what you hear, especially what Swedes always say, is we are the most secular country on the globe. We are the less religious on the globe. But is that true? Well, it depends. First of all these investigations are done in America, and the questions are American questions. And when Swedes answer that, the result becomes very strange. So if a Swede had asked the questions, it would be quite different. So you could say that until 1860s, you were, as a part of the Kingdom of Sweden, you had to sit in church every Sunday. You were punished if you weren't sitting there. If you were religious or not, if you were believing or not, no one cared. After that law changed in 1860, the churches were emptied more or less, and 10% stayed because they wanted. And we have still the same number, really. That hasn't changed
too
much.
What was that date?
1866 or something. So when you go to a service on a Sunday at 11 o'clock, you will find, not in a big city centre, that's quite a lot of people, but in the countryside, not so many people live in the countryside any longer, you will find churches with five people. And say, ooh, they are not Christian any longer. No, they are not high mass Sunday service Christians. That's true. If you go on in to the same church in the evening to a concert, the church is full.
Yes.
If you go on a Tuesday evening, the church is full because then the choirs are rehearsing. Each church has at least five choirs and they are filled. So 20% of all Swedes sing in a choir. Most of these choirs are organized by churches. If you ask these singers, are you religious? Most of them say, oh, no. Do you like church? Oh, yes.
So it's a question, what is religious?
So religious in Sweden is something that we, from middle of 19th century, connects to strangeness. Because free churches, as the state of the Church of Sweden was the state church, there was small church movements, what we today call evangelical churches, Pentecostal churches. They started to develop, and they were very, very forbidden first, and then slowly by slowly they were accepted. And the people there expressed their faith in a vocal way, using words like, I have changed my life, I am saved.
Is this where like the born-again language?
And the rest of the population thought, well, that is very odd. That's very strange. Is that language used to be a Christian? When we are not Christians in that way. So the whole language was kidnapped by these free churches. That's why Swedes always say, oh, no, I'm not that, I'm not that, I'm not that. But I'm quite spiritual. And then you ask, well, how do you express that spirituality? And then comes the wood and the sea. So when all these activities in the woods, on the sea and in the water, everyone walking around and camping is seen not as a physical activity because it's good for your body, but it's also something happening to your soul. And a lot of Swedes use spiritual for it.
Like an aneurysm.
They wouldn't say, I find Christ in the trees. But if you If I, as a theologian, listen and translate what they say into church language, that is what they say.
Yeah.
And for us, it's not a problem because God is creator and the creator is present in the creation. So he's not an anti-Christian, but it's a bit anti-church. So we have to distinguish church and Christianity is not the same thing necessarily.
Mm. How would you differentiate them in a Swedish context?
Everything that is organized is church, and Swedes are very organized in many ways, but in this way they want freedom. So they say, I'm spiritual. If you say I am Christian, usually they mean ethical Christian. So if I follow ethical rules, then I'm Christian. If I'm in the nature, then I'm spiritual. Am I in church? I'm churchy.
Isn't pray also something, kind of magic word here?
Yeah, it has been very, very taboo until a little bit recently. It starts to come up more now. People have discovered that pray could be, you could pray silently without words. You could, when you are walking out with your dog, that walk could be a prayer. And that's a new vocabulary. But
that is not frightening people, maybe,
no.
Because I think
and
pray is something.
You don't have to follow certain standards and all that.
I think it's quite interesting. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you was very simply this: are Swedes secular? Because you read article after article globally of exactly this thing, the most secular country in the world. And if you read anything by Lars Tregård, he's a historian, and he would describe it as a very Lutheran secularism and sort of how society is organized around you work and you get your rights and the need of sort of doing your duty within society. And I think what's interesting about this Swede saying, no, I'm not a Christian from an ethical perspective, maybe someone would say I'm privately religious or I'm privately spiritual. Because at the same time, Sweden is it's very focused on social responsibility. There is still a sort of ethic in Swedish society. And I think which is very important to know if you're new moving here, this understanding of the role of sort of the individual and the state that Lars Tregård talks about. My question at the end of this, if I can actually formulate one, is how does this actually play out in society with sort of saying, you're a Christian or you're a Muslim, like that's good for you. I'm glad it works for you. But at the same time, there being other aspects of society that are sort of positive of like, but you do need to believe this about human nature.
Yeah. You could say that there are views on humanity and creation, if we use a bit of spiritual language, that are very Christian, but they are cut off in Sweden from that terminology.
Yeah.
But the values are very much still there.
Yeah.
So the protection of children, absolute horrific reaction if you hurt a child, bless a child, or is a black child systematically in a situation that is unfair, school or whatever, society must react and individuals must react in the same way for dogs, pets, animal farms, cows, chickens. If they are maltreated, there is a row, not because it's bad for the economy, but it's bad for creation. You could say, I mean, if you are speaking in a biblical way, you could see it's an offense towards the creator, and you don't use that language, but you have the same intensity in your terror.
That's interesting.
So all these values that creation is holy, individuals are holy, and especially the vulnerable. The vulnerable individuals and the vulnerable parts of creation. That is always, you have to give your voice to that if you have power.
I think about the fact that so many international people are moving here. How does that affect the Swedish church? now and in the future,
yeah,
I think?
Well, unfortunately, I should say that we don't see so much of these, well, if you call it European and Western workers with a religious background. Perhaps they are sitting in the pews listening. Mm-hmm. What we have been affected much more of is the influx of Syrian Orthodox, Lebanon Orthodox, or other Orthodox groups from the Middle East, because they are now permanently residing and they are learning Swedish. Mm. And they are not always very positive to their Orthodox church tradition. So they leave that and they come to the Church of Sweden, and they come with a completely different spirituality, very different way of doing things in service and talking about it. And of course, the question of Swedish and all that. But in some areas, that has been quite, well, you could call it refreshing, because they speak about faith in a very different way. So they have put faith as a word into the service again. Not the service is no longer a lecture about interesting biblical passages and then the coffee afterwards. So the church service has become a moment of meeting God, because they talk like that.
Then it's maybe not that important which church you belong to. So it's more like, it's more open for anyone, you could say.
Yeah.
Because if you come here as a newcomer, you maybe don't know where to go to find your friends and your community.
And it's all the services are in Swedish.
I wanted to ask you that.
That obstacle is quite big if you come. And we, in fact, in the cathedral, we have a small program with the structure in English. Yeah. But I mean, everything said is still in Swedish.
Is so, there any parish, English-speaking parish?
Yeah, well, you have two, really. You have Church of England has a presence in Sweden, as in many countries. That church is called St. Siegfried and St. Peter, and it's located across the road from Bärvalhallen, the concert house in Djurgården. It's a very English building already there in the churchyard, very English style. And the whole service is an Anglican service according to English principles. Mm-hmm. So everything's very English there, not only language English, but it's English England, UK English. But the people there are not necessarily from England, England. They are from the old empire. So it's a lot of East Africans, a lot of South Africans, Kenya, Tanzania, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, a few from the States, because it's a bit too English probably for them. but you have it's really global, but global from a London perspective. But I mean, everything that is in English language. And they are located on Swedish soil, but that's really their only Swedish part. Otherwise, it's very Anglican.
Yeah, it could be a good point to start if you
can. Yeah, and his service is at 11 on Sundays. And Nick, as he's called, Nick Howe, is the vicar there. He has been in Stockholm now for decades, so he knows Swedish. And he has also some type of introduction things to Stockholm life during the week.
That
so he
nice.
Sits in Kulturhuset on Tuesdays or Thursdays and he walks here and there. And so he tries also. But the most of that parish is people now permanently living. Some are diplomats, but usually permanent. And many are Swedes, having worked or lived abroad and or liking Anglican church. So that's one branch, and that's fairly similar to Church of Sweden, though they use a little bit more words in the Anglican service than we do. And they sing less hymns than we do. So they have more spoken words and we have more sung words. And then you have some of the free churches, I think they have some services on in English language. But that's really what we have for the moment. In the beginning of 2024, Nick is going to come up to the cathedral and have services on Sunday evenings in English, three Sundays a month.
Yeah, I've seen that some, I sing in the church where you work, in the cathedral. But I know that some parishes have, they borrow churches for their own language group.
Yeah.
I know the Polish, for example.
But then you go into the Catholic now, Catholic or Orthodox Christian. Catholic Stockholm or the Catholic Sweden, first of all, until 1784, it was death penalty to be a Catholic on Swedish soil.
Really?
But then in 1784, Catholic masses were allowed in specific areas for foreigners.
Mm.
So we're not death penalty for having it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was late part of 18th century. And then it was allowed in 1860s, late part of 1860s, for a Swede to convert and become a Catholic.
Okay.
As late as 1860s. Mm. Most of the Catholics today are from different Catholic countries.
Mm.
There's a big Polish group, there is a big Philippine group, South American group, and some, not many, but some Swedes converting.
Mm.
You have, in the city centre of Stockholm, you have two Catholic centres, quite different from each other. You have the Catholic Cathedral in Södermalm.
Yes.
Where you have a lot of Philippine, I think, also. And then you have the Jesuits in Kungsträdgården. They have mostly South American focus. So there you have Spanish and Swedish Catholic masses. But you have also in this Eugenia in Kungsträdgården, you have a lot of courses, lectures in the weekdays. Some are in English, some are in Swedish.
And the German church in the old town?
And then in the old town, we have then two churches from the past, really echoes from the past, where the Finnish church and the German church. Both these churches are Church of Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
But in different languages. So Church of Sweden in Finnish language, Church of Sweden in German language.
Mm. Yes.
The Finnish is because Finland and Sweden was one country, so it wasn't different, but there were two languages. The German church was for all the German trademen who didn't go back in wintertime to Germany. So they had a church of themselves, but according to the Church of Sweden. So the whole service translated into German for them. And the church is still there, and there is a very, very active musical life with two fantastic organs, a lot of concerts, and services on Sunday in German. Everyone speaks Swedish because they have been living here since the First World War, so they are not newcomers, but the service is in German. So if you know a little bit German, you can always go there, and then during the coffee, you can always speak Swedish or English with them. So if you compare that with the Anglican church, that's something else, because that's a church from England, really situated in this country, no connection to us.
Exactly.
While the German is part of us, but with another language.
Mm. Ulf, we've been talking a lot about Christian churches, Lutheranism and Sweden, the history of Christianity. What about other religions and Stockholm and Sweden? How... Yeah. If someone has moved here and wants to be a part of different faith communities, where do you suggest they look?
Well, if you are a Jew, you are privileged because the Jews were allowed in Sweden before the Catholics.
Mm.
It's very interesting. The Jews were allowed 10 years before the Catholics. The Jews were allowed to work in 1772, and the first synagogue was in the old town.
Mm.
And then it was moved to the present location in the 1860s, down just by the Kungsträdgården, just by behind the Jesuits. It's just on their courtyard. It's a huge synagogue, one of these fantastic, exotic, oriental-style synagogues.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
And there you have services on Friday evening and on Saturday.
Mm.
You have a vibrant, I should say, Jewish community, not only in the synagogue itself, but also if you walk from there, you cross Nyborgplan and you go uphill, you have on your left side on Nyborggatan, the Jewish center.
Mm.
You have a school, a kindergarten, and a bit older children. And there you have a big lecture room, and you have shops selling kosher food and all that. the security is such that you can't just come and pop in and say hello. You have to write before, so you are on the list, and then show your ID and all that. But if you, as long as you do that, it's quite okay. And they are used to many different languages. And of course, that is a Jewish community. They can't decide on one different specific thing. So they have three different synagogues working in different languages, Swedish or Hebrew or mixed. There is one Orthodox synagogue in Södermalm, only in Hebrew. And the big one in the city center is in Swedish mostly, though the Torah is read in Hebrew. But there you are welcome as a visitor or as a belonging Jew, and we have a lot of mixed marriages in Sweden and in Stockholm, and that's a constant discussion. Are these newcomers, are they really Jews? Have they converted, and are they still Jews if they have converted or whatever? Right. So that's a very Jewish discussion. So you could say that the synagogue itself is conservative. So it's not a liberal, I mean, these words, liberal, conservative, orthodox, they are 19th century words, so they really don't mean what we tend to talk about today. But the building itself is conservative, but the rabbi, it's a female, and she calls herself orthodox, but that is a question of food when she have orthodox principles. If you're a Muslim, you have quite a variety of mosques. You have majority here is Sunni. You have the big mosque in Södermalm, close to Medborgarplatsen. And then you have smaller mosques, really around, especially in the suburbs. Some of these are language governed. So there are Turkish mosques speaking Turkish. There are some speaking Arabic, but there are some speaking Balkan, because many of the Muslims are from the Balkan countries, so they're Bosnian. So they are not all speaking Arabic. And then, of course, you have the big Persian wave of immigrants, and they have Shia mosques, and you have them also a little bit here and there. Some in the city center, usually very small ones in cellars.
Yeah.
But in the suburbs, they can be bigger. And we have a network now in Stockholm where representatives from all different religion, they meet every month to talk about different subjects.
Like an interfaith council.
To first of all, to get to know each other, drink coffee, say, I am not dangerous, are you dangerous? do you want to convert me or what? And then to when necessary, have activities. And we had, the last one we had was during the attack on Ukraine when that started. So we had already the week after, we had a big service in the cathedral where all these different religions came, and some were reading, some were singing, some were praying, and some were giving evidence of directly from the Ukraine soil. So it's an organization that helps to create a network.
I remember that service. It was very, very strong experience, I must say.
And I mean, the conclusion could be that even if everything really is in Swedish, most Swedes speak English, so you can't really interrupt, but you can always ask afterwards, and the people will communicate with you and can explain a lot of things. So you are in one way in a very Swedish society, but it's a bilingual society, not really expressed as such, but easily communicate. I myself, as before I became a priest, I worked as a tour guide and as a teacher in Poland and in Egypt and in many different places. And I mean, sometimes you really feel that you are in an exotic spot and you can't communicate with the person. Sweden is very exotic, but you can communicate really with everyone.
Very true.
Even if the exotic parts are still there, you can try to understand why do we do it like this.
And I also think that if you come here as a foreigner, you don't know where to go. You can always go into a church and ask for help and ask, where can I go? Yeah. So I think everyone is really welcomed.
Yeah.
It's important to, as a message to to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think our listeners have learned a lot about Sweden.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And
thanks for inviting me.
Right, so Philip, we learned so much today.
So much.
Yeah. What's your takeaway from today? What did you learn that was new to you?
Yeah, I think I learned sort of what does it mean for the church to have been separated from the state and how that continues. And I think sort of this history of the Church of Sweden sort of being the voice, being the ears of the vulnerable people of society within politics that is still the same today and maybe in different ways, but really that the split from the state was sort of this idea of power, of who was voting for the bishops. And so I think seeing the Church of Sweden as the eyes and ears of vulnerable in society was helpful for me to understand the connection still today.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about for you?
Yeah, I think it's also a very reassuring message to know that the church is always there for anyone. I think that's very, it's important if you come, you feel lost, you feel lonely. If you feel that you're just sitting at home, we have met many of these people.
Yeah.
Oh, don't dare even go out. Go and visit a church or some temple of your own faith, but don't stay at home. You will find friends, and there will always be someone listening to you. I think that's a very important take, and that it has always been like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it still will be in the future, I think.
Exactly.
And also that there is a cooperation between different leaders, religious leaders. I think that's a very important thing too.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And we know there are many different details that we mentioned today in the episode. So if you didn't have time to write them down, please check the show notes and you can find links there.
And this podcast is produced by Stockholm Academic Forum.
Stockholm is a state of mind. Yeah, we break it down like this and like that. Welcome to the podcast.